I predicted on this podcast before the season started that the Eagles were going to be in the Super Bowl. I had Eagles and Texans. And right now we're taping on a Thursday night. I feel really good about one half of that prediction. Now, standing in the way of the Eagles would be the Lions, and we'll get to them as we go through every game here. That's what this podcast is all about, every game, every week. We'll do Detroit, and they're a massive, gigantic favorite this week against Jacksonville, as they should be. But the Eagles, the ebbs and flows and roller coaster ride of this season for them. During this five-game winning streak, Jalen Hurts has been at his best, but they've done it beating cupcake teams. They did it beating the Giants. Now, I wouldn't say that Cincinnati is a complete joke. They're not, but T. Higgins was a late scratch in that game, and so the Bengals' offense was not at 100%. We know what their defense is. Pathetic. So they've been gradually getting better, improving. They did it against suspect teams. Tonight, Washington, one of the great stories in the NFL, this was kind of a dud of a game, a boring game, until Philly opened things up in the second half. And they've got some things about them that I think make them a team that is on the very, very short list of championship contenders. Let's start with Barkley, because I think he's actually the juiciest of the ingredients that they have of a championship team. You know, we've seen two guys this year, Hall of Fame caliber talents, change teams, running backs that were allowed to leave by their franchises, teams that were not really winning teams because of their age and their price. Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley. Barkley was more about price. Henry was more about age. And those guys are flourishing in new spots. They're 1-2 in the league in rushing. They're the only guys, as we just get over the halfway point of the season, that each have more than 1,000 yards. And seamless transition for both. Henry has made Lamar Jackson better. And Barkley, I think, he looks rejuvenated. He looks like the guy. I'm in Pittsburgh. Everybody knows that who follows me. When I watched him at Penn State, I thought, If they didn't have that rule that made you wait 3 years, after his freshman year, he could go to the NFL and be a great running back now. And he had to put the tread on his tire in college because that's just the way the rules work. But he was a magnificent talent at 21, 22 years old, where he was already one of the best running backs in the world. And we're seeing that guy again. The offensive line highlighted, even without Kelsey, they were ass kickers in the second half of this game. He takes a hole. You give him an inch, he takes a mile. This guy, we saw the backwards jump, leapfrog play the other week, but it's more than just the sizzle of those plays. He is still a star. And so the Eagles got him. That's a credit to Howie Roseman. The other thing they did, and I think Nick Sirianni's a goof. I think he's brash when he really comes off as kind of a cocky jackass. Like when they were beating the Browns barely at home and he was giving it to fans there. And it's like, come on, man. They hate your guts right now and your team's underachieving. Keep your mouth shut. But he went out and he hired, whether it was forced on him and he just has to put up with it, or he made the decision. Either way, I don't care. Vic Fangio on this staff as their defensive coordinator, one of the biggest moves of the NFL season was getting him there. And it's taken some time, but this is an elite defense thanks to, I think, one of the best play callers on that side of the ball in the entire NFL. Jaden Daniels tonight only had 191 passing yards, but that defense did to Daniels exactly what the Steelers did last week. They bottled him up. He had 18 rushing yards. That's it. This guy's been a phenomenal dual threat quarterback. In both of their losses now during this mini losing streak, he's done nothing on the ground. He's taken these high-end players from Georgia that they kept drafting, most notably Jalen Carter in the middle, and those dudes are balling out. They're playing. Jalen Carter's playing like he's Aaron Donald right now. And they drafted new corners. Quinyon Mitchell held the rookie from Toledo. They picked in the first round. A kid from the MAC went in the first round. He held Terry McLaurin to one catch and 10 yards. They needed to revamp. James Bradbury sucked. They needed to completely overhaul their corners. They drafted DeJean from Iowa, and this Mitchell kid looks like he is a star in the making. This defense, you put them up there with Kansas City, the Chargers, the Steelers, the Broncos. It's one of the five best in the NFL. So say what you will about Sirianni. He hired the right defensive coordinator. They drafted the right guys. And Jalen Hurts, scary situation with him where he had to get evaluated for a concussion. But he had another, at the end of the day, had another fantastic game. Didn't throw a touchdown pass, but was very efficient. Didn't turn the ball over. The kicker there was an issue. I mean, the first half, like I said, was lousy. And Washington was right in the game because Elliott missed two field goals and missed an extra point. For the first 5-6 weeks of the season, it looked like kickers couldn't miss anything. Now we're seeing some guys struggle. This guy was automatic last year, only missed two kicks. He missed three in this game tonight. And then as far as the Commanders go, look, their over-under in Vegas was 6.5. They've already gone over that. They've already exceeded expectations. So they lose to both Pennsylvania teams. Offensively for Daniels, coming back down to earth, I get that. Look at their next three games, though, before they play the Eagles again. At home for the Cowboys, at home for the Titans, and at the Saints. Okay? Those three games. See, Spencer's right on it, too. I just said that about Elliott. He missed more tonight than he did last year. The Commanders should win their next three. And so if they do that, that gets them to 10-4. That pretty much makes them a lock in the NFC playoffs. So they're not an elite team. They're not a top five team or whatever. Fine. But I would not. Hey, Daniels tonight, I thought, looked a tick slow. Herb Street pointed that out. And on that fourth down play where they missed it, you could see the nerves getting to him. But overall, the guy's still been phenomenal. And I don't think Commanders fans are going to complain about what happened tonight because they're obviously ahead of schedule. And I still think this season can end the way that it did in RG3's rookie year, where they make the playoffs, not going to win the division, but they make the playoffs and you know, something to build on. They think about it. They could win 10 or 11 games, and it's conceivable they're the 5 seed and they play at Atlanta in the first round, wildcard weekend. And given Kirk Cousins' playoff history, that would be a very winnable game, and they'd be playing with house money at that point anyways. All right, so that's Thursday Night Football. We're going to do every game of Week 11 right here on First and Pod. And, of course, the next game has to be the game that at 4:25 Eastern is nationally televised. Everybody will get this game on CBS. No regional coverage here. Chiefs and Bills, CBS crew, including the pregame show, going up to Buffalo for this one. The game of the year, should Kansas City be an underdog? That's right. The Bills are a 2-point favorite in this game. Even though the Bills, you might say, they should be a favorite because even though Kansas City's 9-0, four of those wins have come on the last play of the game, like last week against Denver. And in the regular season, the Bills are 4-1 against the Chiefs, Sean McDermott versus Andy Reid, 4-1. So the game's in Buffalo, not in Kansas City. Last year, the Bills beat the Chiefs in the regular season. Favor the Bills, right? Wrong. Wrong. Buffalo should not be favored in this game. The Bills' big test to this point in the season was at Baltimore. That was a Sunday night game. That was going back to Week 4 in late September. And they got crushed. They got destroyed. I think the final score of that game, Spencer helped me out with it. I think it was 35-10. And give me Josh Allen's stat line in that game when you get a second. That was their one litmus test game of the season, and the Bills flunked it. They got crushed. Okay, they beat Miami earlier in the year when Tua was playing. They're running away with this horrible division. For years, the Patriots would win the division every year and go 6-0 against the AFC East, maybe slip up at Miami or something because Brady could never play well there. And they were just a shoe-in to win 10 games every season at least because their division was so bad. That's what's happening this year for Buffalo. So they get to get fat on Miami, New York, and New England. I'm not saying 16 of 29 for 180 exactly. 16 of 129, 180. The Ravens have the worst pass defense in the NFL. They've given up the most yards per game. And Allen only had 180. And we've seen Kansas City's defense dominate all year. All year. They're going to get their left tackle. Morris is healthy in this game. When he was out against Denver, that was a big problem. I told Pat that on this podcast, that that was the one Achilles heel for this team, and it showed up in the Denver game. And so they're going to get the regular starter, who's not great, but he's healthy enough for this game to start. You know, Buffalo, during this winning streak, I just beaten the Colts and Joe Flacco. I'm just not impressed yet with the caliber of teams they've run through. Spencer, pull up their schedule for me when you get a second here, and I'll trust you. What's the Bills? Give me their two best wins of the season. Give me the games objectively where you would say this, if this were like the college football playoff committee and we're subjectively ranking teams, what are their great wins? What are the victories that make people think Buffalo this year is a better team than Kansas City? Amari Cooper is going to play in this game. That is a nice boost for Buffalo to get him back after he missed the last couple of games with an injury. Spencer says maybe beating Seattle 31-10. The Seahawks stink. The Seahawks lost to the Giants at home. The Seahawks are probably going to finish in last place. We'll get to that later. So I'm befuddled by this, and the worst thing about it for Buffalo is when you give, and Spencer's right about this, it's going to go way up in class for the Bills here. They're got to play the Niners, the Rams, and Detroit after this game. When you give the Chiefs a reason to play the underdog card and do a little bit of us against the world, they've been so good. I think they're 11-3. Mahomes all time when he's an underdog. He was an underdog in the last three playoff games last year, Buffalo, Baltimore, and the Super Bowl. I love him in these spots where people are picking against him, and they're 9-0, and they're getting questioned. I've questioned them at times. I saw this crazy stat. Spencer, this blew my mind. The Saints have led for more time in-game. So add up the seconds and minutes where a team is in the lead. The Saints have led more this year than the Chiefs. That boggles the mind. The Saints have fired their head coach, for God's sakes. And so that's how you get to 9-0, winning all these razor-thin games. But no, I will be betting so much money on the Chiefs as an underdog, and they should be favored in that game. Not a big favorite, but a small one. Ravens and Steelers, there it is, 12-1-1 against the spread as an underdog as Mahomes. My God, that's the best bet in sports, period. Ravens and Steelers, I will be at this game. I'm super excited about it. Lamar Jackson, and this is why I say all the time, Lamar Jackson is overrated, even though he has two MVPs. He has one win against the Steelers in his career. And the question here is, why is Pittsburgh his kryptonite? Because against the NFC, he's lost one time in his entire career as a starter. The guy dominates the other conference. And Pat and I surmised when we talked about this that it's because they don't see him very often. Well, the Steelers have only faced Lamar Jackson four times. Think about that. The guy has been in the league going back to 2018, and they've only played him four times when they meet twice a year. And his numbers in those games, 1-3 record, 4 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 5 fumbles. He's been sacked 20 times. He doesn't have a rushing touchdown. His passer rating against the Steelers is 66. Bryce Young's passer rating this year is 66. The Steelers turn Lamar Jackson into Bryce Young. But here's the thing, and I'm not saying this because I have a reputation for being critical of Mike Tomlin. Okay, I think Mike Tomlin, since 2016, is an overrated coach, albeit having a great season this year with the switch to Russell Wilson and convincing Justin Fields. The Bears made that trade because Fields wanted to come here. going 4-2 with him, convincing Patrick Queen to leave Baltimore and sign for less than his market value here, the All-Pro inside linebacker who's in a revenge game. Tomlin's had a fantastic year. I think the reason why Lamar Jackson stinks against the Steelers is the same reason he stinks in the playoffs. I think it's nerves. I think that there are some guys, and maybe he'll get over it on Sunday, and once he gets the gorilla, the monkey off his back, the world, the weight of the world on his back, he'll be a different player. That's possible. But I think he just puts too much pressure on himself in these games, and how it manifests is by trying to do too much, by trying to be the hero, by trying to be the guy, he makes critical mistakes. Last year in Pittsburgh, the one game he started against them, they had the game won. He threw an interception to Joey Porter Jr. in the end zone, a play that most high school quarterbacks would say, I either got to throw a better ball here or not even throw there when I have a lead late in the game, not even risk it. And we've seen him, like the five fumbles, some of them are just him slippery soap, the ball slipping out of his hands. We'll see here, because Lamar Jackson is bad at three things: winning in the playoffs, beating Kansas City, and beating his arch rival, the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I think it's because he gets in his own head, and I predict it's going to happen again in this game. Even though they are the best rushing team in the NFL, the Steelers do well against the run. Even though they're great, they've got the most dynamic offense in NFL history, where they're averaging 7 yards per play. Watch the Ravens struggle to score in this game. I think the Steelers are going to hold them under 20 points, and Pittsburgh's going to walk away with a win and a division lead. And that's just not me being a homer, damn it. That is me actually looking at the way Jackson has played against the Steelers over the years and thinking that that trend is not going to change in this game. All right, we got to pick up the pace, as Danny Parkins used to say on this podcast. And what do you know? It's the perfect segue to talk about his team, the Packers and Bears. Chicago fires Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator. And there's a report out of ESPN Chicago that some of the veteran players on the team want Caleb Williams benched. What the frig is going on here? People have said about this issue that one play has changed the trajectory of their season. And that's true, but it's also false. There's two plays that did it. Everyone points to the Hail Mary. They brought it up again on the Thursday Night Football broadcast. The way things came crashing down on Chicago, if they don't give up that touchdown, they win the game 15-12, and they're off and running. Williams gets the better of Daniels in that 1-versus-2 matchup. It's a gigantic win, and they're one of the stories of the season in a positive way. They lose to Tyreek Stevenson. Things happen where he's caught on tape or caught on a phone, getting into it with fans, all that. Yes, like that right there was a turning point. But so too was the decision in that game at the goal line to hand the ball off on a trick play to a backup center, a backup offensive lineman who fumbled the ball. And that getting too cute, that getting too smart, I think caused players in that locker room to revolt and rebel against the coach and the offensive coordinator. It is a much smaller, it is a light beer, great taste, less filling. It's almost like a light beer version of what happened in the Super Bowl with the Seahawks at the 1 yard line with Russ and not giving the ball to Marshawn Lynch. That caused those guys, many of them, to turn on Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll and the coaches there, thinking that they had a championship taken away from them. I'm saying light because obviously this is a game early in the season and not the Super Bowl, but I think it's the same concept. Like that goal line decision, when players saw that they were trying to do something that gave them the glory, the credit, and it was something so far outside the box, so dumb, and it's one of the plays that cost them the game. They get no points in that possession. I think it had everybody there starting to rethink their relationship with the coaches. There was a quote that Keenan Allen said, the offensive coordinator there, Waldron, was trying to be way too nice to people. All after the fact stuff, only things that come out after a guy get fired. I doubt he actually felt that way. He's just trying to come up with or make up reasons now to justify them doing this. The other thing about this decision to basically blow it up in Chicago that I find strange is if you had said to a lot of football fans, if we had polled football fans, just not people in Chicago, but NFL fans, and said, hey, the Bears have a rookie quarterback, Caleb Williams. They're going to be 4-5 halfway through the season. Is that a bad year? Are they having a bad season? Yes or no? Answer that question. I think most people would say no. They had higher expectations. I mean, Parkins picked them to, I think, go to the Super Bowl, or my buddy Nick Wright did. I don't know what the heck, what drug he was on that day he showed up to FS1 and said that. But I think their over-under was 8.5. So that's underachieving, but not grossly underachieving. They're not the friggin' Cowboys. So panic move there. I get it. I didn't think it was the right decision to bring back Eberflus anyways. It's incredible how one game and a couple of plays caused the players in that locker room and the fan base and the media there in Chicago to turn on them. And it is. The writing's on the wall. Eberflus is dead man walking.